Well, I can't quit you, babe, but I got to put you down for a while.
Hey everybody, I'm Patrick Hunter and welcome back to Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. I'm here with my buddy Aris Pina, and man, we got some boxing to talk. How you doing, man?
Doing great. I'm we have a new president, which is outstanding. And things are looking up, yeah, and we have a pretty good fight, I think, coming up this weekend. And an interesting week, recap to go across. So
yeah, man. I mean, usually you and I, when we're doing a boxing podcast, we're doing some history stuff. So it's nice to actually talk some contemporary boxing with you we've done it before, but it's been a little while.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a rarity for me, I'd say. I barely even talk about contemporary stuff on Twitter for that matter. So,
well, I mean, it's been a little while since we've had anything like worthwhile from the contemporary time period to even talk about, but for 2 weekends in a row, and it's not like boxing just started 2 weeks ago, but I would say, you know, really big, meaningful boxing beyond that Charlo pay-per-view card. It started about 2 weeks ago, then last weekend, the weekend before this last weekend, you know, continued onward, and then, you know, it kind of looked like this past weekend we were hopefully maybe looking at something possibly entertaining, and kind of fizzled out a little bit, man. I'm a little disappointed, I'm not gonna lie.
Well, absolutely. You were not that we were looking for a major competitive, you know, back and forth battle between Devin Haney and Yuriorkis Gamboa on Saturday, but you were looking at least for Haney to make a statement performance. You know, Teofimo Lopez had just made a statement performance in his last fight, obviously against Lomachenko, and solidified himself as the baddest man in the division and unified champion with, well, how many fights does he have? 15, which is incredible. Because he took that risk and decided to do what he had to do. So Haney, being the precocious star that he is, he's around like 21 years old himself, and known as a titleist. He's not champion, a titleist, because the WBC is ridiculous, as well as all the other sanctioning bodies. And he was defending his strap against Gamboa. You know, Gamboa was that guy from way back in the day that was everyone looked at as like Teofimo and Haney as, you know, like a future superstar. And for a while, he provided a lot of thrills, but obviously he's seen better days. And as, you know, when he was younger in his career, he was feasting on guys and gatekeepers and, you know, older contenders and stuff like that, faded guys to build up his record. Now he's kind of in turn become that guy, you know, for the younger champions to use as like a good name on their record. You know, he put up a good fight against Tank, his last fight before that. And, you know, he also put up a great fight against Crawford years ago. But by this point, though, you know, Gamboa, obviously the wheels have fallen off. He's much seen better days. He, you know, injured his Achilles, I think it was, against Tank. And so this was supposed to be like a performance against Haney. He was supposed to be one of the, you know, biggest rising stars in the sport. And the guy was a complete package, and who everybody, and I mean everybody, has touted is supposed to be, you know, a future pound for pound great. You know, you thought that he was supposed to stop Gamboa with at least within 5 to 6 rounds. And in fact, if you looked at Twitter, most people actually bet that. And because they were pissed off as hell the next day complaining about how much money they lost, because Haney didn't do any of that. You know, he decided just to coast and only did enough to make sure that he was going to be able to win a comfortable decision, which he did. He didn't lose a round, but he also didn't do enough to try to really push the gears to stop Gamboa. So in that sense, there was, you know, a lot to be desired.
I agree 100% with you. And there's also kind of like the extra element that, I mean, just to kind of backtrack a tiny bit when we're talking about DAZN, anybody who's a boxing fan knows this, but just in case anybody who's kind of forgotten or needs their memory refreshed, when DAZN hit the scene, man, a lot of people, myself included, perhaps we didn't see like a savior or anything like that, but at the very least, I'm speaking for myself, and I think a lot of other people, we saw what the technology could help bring boxing. That you know, a dedicated, not that DAZN only shows boxing, but that they were really kind of entering the foray with a strong stable of boxing talent or exclusive boxing talent, where it was like, whoa, all right, they're pretty serious. And on top of being pretty serious, they seem a little bit more serious about the leap in technology and where technologically showing live TV and stuff like that is going. Mm-hmm. And anyway, signing Anthony Joshua, signing Canelo, massive. And then so on Friday, Canelo's manager, Eddie Reynoso, drops the news that Canelo's actually a free agent. Nobody knows precisely what happened with the lawsuit against Golden Boy and DAZN, whether or not chunks of it are still ongoing, blah, blah, blah. But the point is, as a free agent now, he's, I'm guessing, probably not going to be working with DAZN anytime real soon. And so that kind of immediately meant, well, fuck, dude, if you bought that year DAZN package expecting to see some Canelo, that's a pretty big reason for you buying that shit gone now. And yes. So applying that to this whole Haney
back situation, to paying $80, 80 to 100 for a Canelo fight or whatever it's going to be.
Yep. And on top of that, if you already signed up for DAZN, who knows what you're getting now, but what you're obviously not going to be getting, or at least I would imagine, is Canelo, and you're not going to be getting any of those middleweights that DAZN signed to be opponents for Canelo against Canelo either. And I mean, that's shitty. So then,
yeah, but they still have, I think, a decent roster with Golden Boy. They still, for now, you know.
They're not done. It's just that I think that it's very difficult to justify.
No, Canelo is a big loss. It's an absolute big loss, and for the average fan, I don't think the average fan, as big as Ryan Garcia is now, and as Virgil Ortiz is going to be, I don't think anyone. The average fan didn't decide to buy their, you know, make a DAZN subscription, subscribe to DAZN on the basis of them. You know what I mean? Did not make a DAZN description for Boo Boo. They didn't make one for Billy Joe Saunders.
No.
Maybe they did it for Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, it might have been a few for Golovkin or something. Yeah, but like
something
not
like that
many.
Too. But they were also, when they signed up for Golovkin, they were thinking with the purpose that eventually he's going to fight Canelo in a third fight.
Exactly.
Now that looks like as distant as ever, because Golovkin is aligned with DAZN and Eddie Hearn. But that being said, look for Golovkin now to probably fight guys like Boo Boo, which is going to be a stylistic nightmare. Ugh. And Billy Joe and, you know, maybe Munguia, stuff like that. But you know, Canelo's going to go on his own now. So his next fight's going to be against Caleb Plant, which undoubtedly is definitely going to be on pay-per-view. And probably a joint thing with PBC. And, like you said, he's big enough now where he's a free agent where he can pick and choose where he wants to go, what he wants to do.
And, you know, kind of applying it to the Haney situation. And I know I'm jumping to a conclusion here in a way. But I know for sure I wasn't the only one doing it. But what I was looking for, and wasn't necessarily expecting per se, but what I was looking for was whether or not Devin Haney was going to step up and deliver, like, you know, a gutsy performance, a spectacular performance, an exciting performance, to be like, to essentially say symbolically, well, you know, he might have left DAZN, but look at me. I'm a young, talented dude who's going to whoop the shit out of this guy who, you know, got the shit whooped out of him a year ago by the guy who just made a statement last weekend or, you know, 2 weekends ago. So now it's my turn to do X, Y, and Z, you know. And instead of doing that, he seemed, like you said, very comfortable to coast, didn't want to take any risks. Seemed like any time Gamboa was going to lash out rather than do something like, I mean, look, Yuri Orcas Gamboa is the type of fighter, very explosive, reliant on speed and kind of combination punching, but also, like, you know, combinations opening up for a big shot type of thing. And he looked like he couldn't punch off his back foot. He looked like he had no real spring in his step when he was punching. And despite that, Devin Haney was like, anytime he was going to square up, he was like, whoa, I'm out of here. And, or tying up. And he had just about every advantage, maybe, but power.
Yep.
And so it's aggravating to watch a younger fighter who probably should have done more. And I guess what I was trying to say was that also now that Gamboa's mobility and everything are going, I mean, he's a fairly tough guy who's generally not going to get taken out with a single shot. So you're going to have to open him up a little bit. And it didn't seem like Haney was really, he wasn't really breaking him down or anything. He was just kind of like, peck, 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 I'm out of here. Peck, peck, peck over here. Bam, right hand, but not a whole lot on it. And he wasn't doing anything to really break him down or to like soften him up so he could stop him later. So then finally in like the 11th and 12th rounds, when he's kind of like turning on the gas a little bit, it's not doing anything. And Gamboa's old, but not like beaten up. He's just there. So it was unfortunate, especially, you know, if this had just been a fight and we had not seen Teofimo Lopez a couple weeks ago and had not seen Gervonta Davis a couple weeks ago pull out either, you know, entertaining or spectacular performances or some mixture of both, then we'd probably be like, all right, whatever, you know, it was a necessary step for Devin Haney or whatever. But it's not in a vacuum. We have to compare to those other 130 and 135 pounders who are likely to want to face him or to be asked to face him. And frankly, he didn't stand up.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, is that, like, Haney obviously has all the talent in the world. He's, you know, great defense, hand speed, sense of distance, everything with it. He's, you know, a precocious talent that is only going to get better from now. I'm not even sure if he's in his prime yet. But, like you said, for a guy that's held at such a high standard, and because boxers are so rushed now, especially potential superstars are so rushed earlier in their careers to, you know, grab a world title. I say that in, you know, in quotes, because it's so easy to grab, you know, get one. There's 80 different, you know, belts out there in each division that they don't really get a chance to really develop before they're kind of pushed out there. And now they're held at a different standard because of that. So Haney's already out there where back in the 80s, he, you know, would now just be starting to crack like the top 15 and maybe looking for like a fight with the NABF or USBA champion. Haney's already looked at as a recognized titleist. And in a fight where he's going to fight, you know, like a faded veteran like Gamboa, now he's held to the standard where he should be blasting this guy out, especially because Gamboa has been stopped in the past. Like you said, he's not a guy that can be just knocked out really quickly or knocked down all the time because he's like really weak jawed. That's something Sergio Moore kept on mentioning on Saturday, was that, oh, you know, Gamboa usually gets knocked down by shots like this. Thing was, Gamboa back in his early days when he was like a whirling dervish was so off balance and so all over the place that every time he got hit, he was like tripping over his own feet and going down from it. It wasn't because he was hurt. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. I mean,
it wasn't because he was hurt. It was just because he was always flying, you know, flailing. He would get right back up.
He's far more aggressive. Yeah.
Exactly. Now that he's more settled down and he gets hit, sure, he's, you know, he's not like Tex Cobb when it comes to taking a punch, but he's not a weak jaw guy either. So.
No, that's a good point. Not only does that kind of erosion in reflexes and physical whatever, it's not just that we see, but it's also that he's not as aggressive and he's not able to be as aggressive, so there aren't as many opportunities to actually take him out or open him up or whatever. So no, that's a good point. I don't know. I mean, I personally think I could be wrong. I feel as though Devin Haney's pretty talented. I feel as though he does have a lot of skill and that he's a pretty good fighter. I also feel like that was just not a very confident performance by him. It wasn't really a performance that said to me that he was, like, you know, ready for a Teofimo Lopez or ready for even a Gervonta Davis, who's almost certainly going to bring punching power up to 135 pounds. On the other hand, I know that they've been jawing back and forth on social media. I also know that doesn't necessarily mean a fucking thing, but I wouldn't really mind seeing him against like a Ryan Garcia. There's far too much on the line though for that fight to realistically happen, I think, but it's a fight that I think would be pretty fun, and there would, yeah, it would be meaningful. There would at least be some sort of unbeaten versus unbeaten, blah, 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 for whatever that's worth. But yeah, just not the greatest performance, not what we would like to see in a DAZN main event.
No, you know what? And if I'm Haney's people, or I'd like, you know, for me, who I'd like to see Haney fight next realistically. And that's, you know, that'd probably be someone like Javier Fortuna. Like Fortuna would be up in his grill the whole fight.
Yeah.
The badass guy, he hits hard. He's not afraid to get up in there. He always makes you look bad because he's awkward as hell, and he's not afraid to be dirty. And you're just going to be in for a rough evening. If Haney, you know, comes through that fight unscathed and, you know, dominates Fortuna pretty comprehensively to a decision, which more likely will go to, then, yeah, that'd be much more impressive than, say, you know, just kind of going the route with Gamboa and only doing what needed to be done.
Well, it sounds like I agree. I think that would probably be a logical step. And assuming he gets through a fight like that, it sounds like they announced Ryan Garcia versus Luke Campbell for December 5th, or at least that's when they're aiming
for. Yeah, my one of my best friends is in training camp with him right now as we speak.
So that's great, and that's I think that's going to be a real test for Ryan Garcia, or at least a sort of litmus test for you know, where he is. And assuming Devin Haney were to get through,
and that's
a
up for Garcia as well. That should be a step that Haney, you know, him being as a champion as he calls himself, then should be already step, you know, fighting. Campbell is a hell of a fighter, so.
And I was gonna say, assuming Haney could get through like a Fortuna type, I actually think that on the other side of that, he would be well served to take on the loser of Ryan Garcia versus Campbell in terms of seeing how, you know, where he is in the division, which in my opinion kind of speaks to Haney's inexperience and how he just, based on the eye test, as they say, just doesn't quite look to be in the same class right this second is some of these other fighters. But we'll also have to see where Garcia winds up against Campbell, because Campbell's tough, he's kind of crafty, doesn't hit super hard, so it's probably a fairly safe fight in that regard. But still,
I mean, he can, you know, yeah, he can fight. He's a former Olympic gold medalist.
He's gonna come to win.
Yeah, southpaw, amateur pedigree, has already been, you know, fought the best of the best in the lightweight division when he fought Lomachenko and Linares. So, yeah, yep. It's definitely not going to be a walk in the park. If Ryan Garcia can blast Campbell out there, then that will definitely be a statement, a major, major statement. But, you know, I think Ryan's going to be tested, because for all of his power and, you know, how he's been looking, and he does have a great team behind him now, you know, in the Reynoso and stuff like that. So, you know, that his deficiencies for defense and stuff will be, you know, fixed a little bit. He still has a few things to work on, like, you know, his head placement with his chin still wide up in the air is something that I've still noticed. And you got to wonder if he's going to be getting a little too fall a little too much in love with his power, the way he's been blasting out guys lately. You know, a lot of questions to be asked, and Campbell's going to answer a lot of them. So
I agree. Yeah. And it's a very good measuring tape as far as whether or not Ryan Garcia is just a mostly manufactured social media darling type of fighter, or a real fucking fighter. And I guess we're about to find out.
And I hope he is, because, you know, for the sake of boxing, I hope he is, because guys like Garcia are obviously are necessary for boxing and good for boxing. So
yeah,
whether you love him or hate him, who cares? He's not a polarizing idiot like Adrian Broner. You know, he does have a good head on his shoulders. Like my buddy who's out there with him is like best friends with him. And he just tells me how much his family is like so good, and how close knit everyone is, and how wonderful they are. So like, he has a good team around him. He's not like, you know, obviously there's always going to be people trying to stray him in different directions, but hopefully, you know, he keeps himself straight and for the betterment of boxing as that, because boxing needs, you know, always benefits with its stars.
And needless to say, that goes back a long way. So acting like, you know, Ryan Garcia is some sort of anomaly. The only weird thing about it is that it's social media. You know, we had fucking, what's his name? Sean O'Grady, you know, back in the day was seen as just some sort of young kid that was just like a bubblegum punk kid. And then, but he was made to get in there and fight. So,
but he was
anyway.
A kid too, though.
He was like
15 when, you know,
a monster of a father.
Yeah, when old Pat was sending him into the gin mills of Oklahoma to fight all over town against God knows what.
Yeah.
And then randomly, just, you know, when he was 18, decided, he was like, oh, you know what? He needs a loss on his record, so let me throw him in with Danny Lopez of all people.
Yeah, just straight to the wolves. I mean, we can't even avoid talking history when we're not even meaning to.
Yeah, but just like...
It can't even help it. But no, it's not a new thing, you know, like these superstar types. Yeah. And sooner or later, they are going to have to show their colors. They're going to have to prove whether or not they're a fighter, whether they are manufactured, whatever the case may be. But I did also want to say one thing. The first thing was that Philip Hergovich wind up stopping Rydell Booker on the undercard, which I was cracking up at, because I just hadn't even been paying attention to the upcoming schedule.
That was a heavyweight explosion fight.
I didn't even realize that Rydell Booker was still an active or semi-active fighter. And I was immediately like, wait, Rydell Booker? Like the guy who fought James Toney back in the day? Yeah, that dude who fought James Toney back in the day. And so I was cracking up because...
I worked his fight on Showtime, actually, last year.
I just didn't even realize he was still going, but the most hilarious thing about that, Rydell Booker looked pretty awful. He was out of shape, and he looked like he didn't even really want to be there. And then at the end of the fight, right after Hergovich stops him, he yells, "You're too old," like in a friendly way, because he's like an old sparring partner, but he's like, "You're too old." And I'm like, well, first of all, earlier when – actually, it was something you mentioned about Haney Gamboa when – Sergio Mora kept saying these punches usually knock Gamboa down. And I'm kind of thinking, man, this is not a good endorsement of your main event. If you keep mentioning how one of the fighters is always getting knocked down and always getting stopped, this is not a good endorsement of your main event. And then on top of that, going forward, you have this dude in one of the undercard fights, basically blatantly saying, yeah, my opponent's old. He's had a hard life. He's gone through a lot. He wasn't in the greatest shape. Just give him a break. And I'm like, fuck, dude, this is not a good endorsement of the dude that you just beat, which basically says that your win is not good. But anyway, okay, that's cool. I have no idea how good he actually is, and it's really tough to say at this point. But even more importantly, it gave me an opportunity to name drop Terry Lane and Tommy Lane, because they are advising the Chinese southpaw heavyweight Zilil Zhang, the 6'6 dude. He was a 2008 Olympic silver medalist, and so I wanted to name drop the Lane brothers because they're cool. And,
oh, you're kidding me? The best people on earth, man. I love Terry.
They're cool as hell. Yeah. And they, I think, manage this dude who's, I think, 37 or 38 at this point. So, you know, time's ticking, but he smacked around Devin Vargas, who a number of years ago was an amateur standout and kind of like an unbeaten prospect. And I know a lot of people spoke very highly of him because they had seen him around the amateur scene. And his brother was a Dallas Vargas, I think. Both of them were kicking around the amateur scene for a number of years and had a family in boxing and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, didn't really pan out. Wound up being a little bit more of a Dwayne Bobick type. And so anyway, he wound up getting... one-two'd, or no, it was kind of like a hook left hand that sent him down, and it messed up his knee, which ended the fight.
That was a solid knockout.
Okay. It was. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. It was no... We'll get to the Ortiz business in a moment. But no, it was at least, you know, it was a hard shot. And the dude does look... It sucks that he's like as old as he is, to be frank, because he looks fairly smooth. He looks...
Oh, he definitely knows how to throw punches, man. He's on, well, of course he knows how to throw punches. He has a good foundation to him. He has a solid jab. He knows how to, you know, work his combinations. And yeah, like you said, he has a solid left hand that has a lot of snap and torque to it. So if you get hit with it, he can catch you.
Yeah, he's I wish he were about 10 years younger. I wish he were Hrgović's age, but you know, I don't mind. He's no Tyshawn Dong or Tayshawn
Dong.
Oh,
I remember him.
He's no, yeah. Oh God.
But like, nah, I don't know. I'd like to see him fight. Would be a good gatekeeper for him. Chisora maybe.
Well, Chisora is like the ultimate gatekeeper right now. You know, he's the kind of guy who's gonna.
Yeah, everybody. But like, either him or Michael. Him and Michael Hunter would probably make for a very awkward fight. But I think if you're gonna move him, then you know, time is of the essence, like you said, because he's not gonna get any younger. So
I think you could probably throw him in with somebody. You could probably throw him in with somebody maybe just below the level of like a Dominic Brazil, Gerald Washington, like.
Oh, I think he'd beat Gerald Washington right now.
You know, like kind of like that level ish, but I think that would be kind of like a decent next step. I just have no idea what they're anyway. The Lane brothers, they're cool as hell, and I wish them luck with their fighter, but. That was probably the brightest spot of that broadcast, to be frank.
I mean, for sure, because you had that. Then you had, like you mentioned, the Rydell Booker fight. Jesus, he was so big.
Yeah, he just didn't look very good. Didn't look real good.
And then the Haney fight, which if you made it, you know, to the 12 rounds to the end of it, good for you. But over on Fox. I, to be honest, I only caught the main event. I wasn't really watching the undercard fights on Fox too much. I was kind of flipping back and forth, but of what the main event was, I mean, I don't even know what you would call that. Ortiz didn't really break a sweat. I'm not sure if the other guy even threw a punch. I forgot what the other guy's name was already. And then Ortiz hit him with, the only way I would describe it, it was like a low rent version of what Hopkins did to De La Hoya.
Yeah, I mean, I have.
Even then, I don't know, man. The Hopkins one was more legit, like 1,000 times more. But, like, I don't even think this dude was trying to throw a fight or do anything. Like, he just sucked. Like, he had no business being in the main event. He had no business being in a preliminary fight. Like, he had no business being anywhere near a card like that. You know, you want to put him on like a local club show for a guy like that's patently a record for like or something. You know, that's one thing, but you're gonna put him on national TV in a main event, really?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that we had already seen like you don't even need to have seen the fights. First of all, he's fairly inactive. This dude, Alexander Flores.
Okay, that's the name.
He's fairly inactive. And then not only is he inactive, but anytime he's taken, like, you know, even remotely a step up, and a couple times when he has not taken a step up, he's either not looked good or flat out lost. Charles Martin knocked him out in 2014, if that's not a decent indicator. And then Joseph Parker in 2018 knocked him out. So we already can just ascertain that, you know, he can be knocked out. We already know that. But, you know, so putting him in a main event against Luis Ortiz on Fox, I don't know. I just remember that I think it was in 2014, up in Temecula. It's a real place, I swear. I wound up actually seeing Brian Campbell and Rafe Bartholomew at this card, and it was the Night of Champions card where they had a shitload of fighters showcased, but all in different fights. Almost all in, like, you know, not very good fights. Tyson Cave was on the, I can't remember, I want to say it was Nick Fuentes that he got robbed against. And, like, it was a bad decision and blah, blah, blah. But there were a number of different fighters. Austin Trout was on the card. Anyway, the whole point of the card was that they were basically fulfilling the contractual obligations that these fighters needed to fight at least one time or at least X amount of times on the calendar year. And it was on like December 15th or something like that. And so I just kind of got the feeling that this was almost like that. That's what it felt like, because I just didn't really understand. You know, Luis Ortiz is he hasn't fought since losing to Deontay Wilder a second time last year, which was, you know, pretty rough. But we again all saw that he has the capability of beating Deontay Wilder for X amount of rounds, but just can't hold on to it. And he's already approximately 112 years old that we know of. So it's like, I'm not entirely sure where they're going with this is what I'm saying. And I don't entirely know where they're going to match him next. So the fight itself.
I would love to see Ortiz against Andy Ruiz.
I could live with that.
They're both PBCers, right?
I could live with that. No, I really could live with that or something like that. You know what I mean? Because we already know that Luis Ortiz is a good fighter and he can really punch. It's just that, like, he gasses, he doesn't have a super great chin, and he's already really old. So, just don't know what they were looking for as putting this as the main event. But I know that they couldn't have possibly, you know, they could not have possibly predicted that a bicep punch was going to knock this dude out. I remember on ESPN a few years ago, it might have even been Tyshawn Dong, dude. I can't remember who it was, though. I just remember that some massive, ridiculous circus heavyweight landed a punch.
Ty Fields?
No, it was since then. I might have been Tayshaun Dong. I'd have to look, but somebody landed a punch on their opponent's shoulder, and the dude just like flopped to the ground and was like, "I'm fucking dead," and was like, rolling around and shit. And it reminded me of that, where like a punch did land. You know, or at least something landed. It was kind of semi-legit, but it was still just like a waste of time and looked awful and looked suspect as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the best main event, but at the same time, Fox, well, you know, when they do put on really good events, they put on great ones. But at the same time, sometimes they'll give you fights like that or...
Yeah, it was a bit of a throwaway.
Yeah, or what's the one... Who was Alvarez's brother made it and was in a main event against who was it, Lara, I think?
Yeah, just yeah, every so often there'll just kind of yeah, be a bit of a head like, scratcher.
Like when Raul Salca, this wasn't on Fox, but like when Salca made it against Danny Garcia on Showtime, you know, sometimes people just make main events. Or like the time HBO had that dubious doubleheader and still one of like I still consider it as maybe the worst card I've ever watched in my life when Rafael Marquez fought Pete Frisina and Hercules Cavallos fought
Margarito.
Yeah, Margarito.
Yep. I specifically remember that because Hercules Cavallos was like the Canadian welterweight champion or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of coming in strong and it was a bit, yeah, it was a dud. I remember that. I definitely remember that. It's funny.
That was really bad.
Well, it was an all heavyweight card. So, I mean, in 2020, you kind of have to expect not so greatness from an all heavyweight card, unfortunately. But
well, that's what they got to do, man. Someone needs to refer to somebody who knew Cedric back in the day and really know how to promote a heavyweight card. All right.
Yeah.
Watch some heavyweight explosions, people.
What you need to do and what Cedric would probably tell you need to do is stick a suitcase of money in the middle of the ring and just have all these dudes fight each other trying to scramble to it. That's what you're going to need to do with a bunch
of heavyweights. Yeah, man. If you know the fistful of heavyweight, you know, the fistful of dollars or whatever we called it back in the day, the tournament.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that wasn't cool as shit, man. That was dope. I watched it on pay-per-view when I was a kid and it was awesome. I didn't watch the original, which
I downloaded it later.
I think the original was like Tony Tubbs winning it or something, but
no, the later one that he did. Yeah, I watched the later one. Yeah,
I watched the later one on pay-per-view. That was the one that Maurice Harris won.
Mo Harris. Yep. Yeah. I remember watching that, yeah, because I mean, the idea was cool as hell, and having any sort of, like, you know, one-night tournament and that, or that kind of thing was just, like, you know, just, that was cool as hell. Yeah. And he had some cool ideas, especially with heavyweights, so, you know, it's not that every heavyweight bout is awful or any of that kind of thing, but in 2020, you can't really come to expect a whole lot from them. But I'm not 100% what to expect from Kell Brook this coming weekend. But yeah. Look, man, there's still a lot of names at welterweight. We still gotta figure out a couple things at welterweight. And I mean, we're now getting to a point where Terrence Crawford, dude is 33. Like, he's not. I remember seeing Terrence Crawford fight actually Brady's Prescott. And that was on the undercard of Brandon Rios versus Mike Alvarado 2 in Las Vegas. And I remember watching that fight. And, I mean, one of the reasons why I remember it was because I thought he looked very good. I liked the way that he looked. And I'm not going to say, oh, I knew I was looking at greatness all the way back then. But I do remember kind of like watching and going like, all right, this is somebody I think to keep my eye on. But in 2013, you know, 7 years ago, he was 25, 26 years old, and he was young. He was kind of coming up, and at 33 years old, it's kind of like, I'm not saying this to shit on the fight this weekend or to shit on anything about Terrence Crawford, but I feel as though he's been at or around 147 pounds for a few years now. It's not like 147 pounds, like the guys have like gone anywhere or anything. There's been a number of welterweights there for a few years now who have been at or toward the top. And obviously we're all well aware of the Cold War, the gap, whatever you want to call it, between Top Rank and Golden Boy and PBC. But I don't really care. I don't really care about, I mean, that's, I don't care that that's your excuse, because whether or not that's your excuse, I still want to see these fights. And whether or not that's your excuse, at the end of the day, it's still going to count against Crawford, whatever the excuse is. So who cares?
And I think Crawford was quoted today. I read on Twitter. He said something to the effect of, he doesn't care if he doesn't fight. If he doesn't fight Spence, like he said something to the degree, like, if he doesn't fight Spence, it doesn't, you know, matter, because it's not going to mess up his legacy. Like, Spence needs it, and Spence needs him more than he needs him, or something like that. Well, and that's just kind of like, you don't want to hear something, you know, you just want to hear that you want to fight. Like, make the fight. Sugar Ray Leonard made sure he had a chance to fight Tommy Hearns. You know, granted, it was back in the day when Leonard didn't even have a promoter, so it was whatever. But, like, they made the fight. Like, moving on to the 90s, you know, De La Hoya and Trinidad were 10 times bigger than anybody in boxing right now from the welterweight division. And you know how difficult it was to make that fight, considering, you know, Oscar was with Bob and Tito being with Don King. Eventually, they still ended up making that fight. So there's really no excuse that, you know, these guys can't get along and try to, like, make interpromotional fights between each other, especially just get Crawford moving. Like, you know, Kell Brook is a, you know, bigger, is a better step in direction than, you know, some of the past guys he's been fighting. But at the same time, it's still not really, like, defining, you know, Crawford still not having a defining fight like that. And you'll say something like, oh, well, you know, it's the fight he beat Gamboa back in the day, and he did this and he did that, and he unified the championship. But still, where's that, like, defining name on his record? Postal? You know, yeah. Gamboa? What, a washed Amir Khan? You know, it's like, Crawford has all the tools in the world. He's a great fighter to watch. You know, he's a joy to watch, especially the way he can, like, seamlessly cross, change from southpaw to conventional. You know, the way he takes joy in just beating you down, how he doesn't mind getting in there and fighting with you, but just, you know, does it in such a great manner that it's just like, you know, he's making it classy. But you just feel like he's still being wasted because he's not being tested against the elite guys that he wants to. Yeah. And, yeah, there's just, that something needs to be done over there. Like, Spence is coming back against Danny Garcia, and that's a great fight, especially, you know, considering what happened to Spence last year. And, you know, you're wondering how his face is going to hold up and stuff like that. Like, this fight's going to answer a lot of questions for him. But then if he comes through after this fight, where is he going to go from there? You know, he's just going to stay in the PBC area and to kind of pick off guys from that matter. Or, you know, maybe he'll move up or something. But, like, there's – they always – everybody, like you said, they just kind of stay in their own bubble. And, you know, it's like – so now sometimes – like, and it stinks, too, for the welterweights because you wonder – and how can a guy – like, how is it easier to make a fight between Wilder and Fury – you know, the heavyweight division where historically it's always been like the hardest to make some of those fights. But how is it to make, how is it that they can, you know, make a deal where they really, they're able to have two fights between Wilder and Fury, but they can't make one between Spence and Crawford?
Well, I mean, Mark Breland was spiking Deontay Wilder's water though.
Oh, so, I mean, yeah, you know, and the egg weights probably, and heavyweights, and
he probably gave him some shit to make him sign for the fight. So.
Probably.
You know, we're going on like about 3-ish years or so, 2-3 years, where we have been clearly asking for Terrence Crawford versus versus Errol Spence. So, I mean, and you can adjust that a little bit on a bit of a scale, obviously, because Terrence Crawford was at 140 pounds for a bit, and we weren't 100% whether he was going to move up or when he was going to move up. And on top of that, Errol Spence has come in over 147 a number of times. So it was kind of like, all right, well, there might be some issue there, and that's fine. However, now it's probably been a solid 2 years to 3 years where that fight has been a possibility and we want it. And what was it, like 5 or 6 years between Floyd and Manny? I'm not saying it's on the same level. I'm just saying, you know, there's even a limit to that shit, to the nonsense between Floyd and Manny. They even came together. So it's kind of just, you know, it will get a little bit old at some point. It sucks that in the meantime, they're both wasting time. We don't even know 100% where Errol Spence is at. Physically, I mean, he looks good, generally speaking, as far as compared to what we thought he was going to look like.
The fight will answer a lot of questions.
Yeah, I mean, he looks much better physically than a lot of us thought. I mean, I thought he's going to look like fucking Skeletor and shit after that accident. And I mean, that sucks. I'm glad he's alive and shit. I'm just saying, we don't really know exactly what that means yet. And that, you know, the Danny Garcia fight's going to answer a lot of questions. But anyway, yeah, it's a fight we want. And somebody brought up the point earlier today that I honestly can't even remember who it was. And so I'd give him credit if I remembered. But somebody brought up the point that, yeah, you know, Sean Porter might have some losses, but Sean Porter's, look at the names that he's taken on. Like, you know, look at the fights that he's taken. I've, you know, crapped on Sean Porter in the past and been like, yeah, I'm skeptical. I don't think he's that good or whatever. But, you know, revisiting that shit, he's obviously gotten better. He's obviously learned. He's obviously kind of just said, I don't really give a shit, you know, about wins and losses. I'm coming to fight. And at the end of the day, dude, you know, I'm going to tell you that affects my Hall of Fame vote. Might not affect anybody else's, but that shit affects my Hall of Fame vote. That's definitely something I look for. So, you know, I'm not saying that I'm putting Sean Porter in the Hall of Fame, and I'm not saying that I'm not putting Terrence Crawford or any of these guys in, but you know what I'm saying. It's just that I don't really care about the excuses or what the reasons are, even if they are legit, because they are. The business reasons are legit. I'm just saying, in terms of what I want to see, in terms of entertainment, in terms of what's right and what, you know, the natural thing to do would be in any other situation because it's boxing would be, I don't care about the excuses. I simply want to see the best fight the best. And you can't have two separate welterweight divisions, dude. It's fucking, it's stupid.
Yeah, and, you know, back in the day, what people would complain about was that, like, everyone wanted to see the WBC and WBA champion fight. Or the WBA, yeah. You know, vice versa, IBF, whatever, mix and match, how you will. And now it's to the point where it's not even about the sanctioning titles anymore. It's about the promotional entities. Oh, you know, I just want to see the PBC guys go against Top Rank. I want to see Matchroom go against this one, that one. And, you know, on certain instances, they're willing to, to throw out guys out there. Like, I get the feeling that PBC wouldn't have a problem servicing someone like Adrian Broner out. You know what I mean? To the other side for Crawford to beat up or something. But in terms of them with their marquee guys, they just don't do it. They're not about that.
Yeah, it's...
And boxing fans lose because of it. So now we're just forced, at that point, we're just forced now to invest in all these different networks and stuff like that. And sometimes that means subscribing to them or paying still crazy prices for pay-per-view fights for fights that we just don't need. Like, do you need
to
see...
And it may or may not pay off.
Yeah.
Like, they may or may not match down the road. So it's like, well...
Like, okay, they're going to make Spence Sean Porter in a rematch, right? Okay, fine. Now that's going to be another pay-per-view fight. Look, Danny Garcia is going to be in another pay-per-view fight against eventually two. What? They're going to put him against Pacquiao or something. Or Mikey Garcia is going to go fight somebody or whatever. Like, they're just going to, you know, how they'll mix and match and try to do these things. And it's just going to kind of be like, well, we're still not getting to the end game of these guys fighting each other ever.
Yeah, you're kind of like running out of ideas.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I do want to talk about Kell Brook in a moment, but on top of that, I don't have any particular issue with Premier Boxing Champions. I'm not a hater or anything like that. And I know that it's super easy to dismiss anybody criticizing them as just a hater or something. But look, man, speaking real, I think it's pretty weak for them to, as an organization or as a promotional entity, say, we're no longer counting the WBO. And basically the glaring reason to do that is to discredit Terence Crawford's claim, his championship claim, and to also conveniently make it so that, like, anybody who is at welterweight can say, oh, who's Terence Crawford? Who's that? Oh, I don't even know who that is. You know, it's some sort of stupid game. So you could say whatever you want, and you can try to cite history and say, oh, well, it's not even a legit title because of 1997, something, something, you know, I don't care. It doesn't matter. I don't even care about the belts. We want the fight. That's the whole point. But, you know, not to look totally past Kell Brook, who's actually a pretty good fighter. He's not just some total turd or something. But there's legitimate concern because in two fights in a row against Gennady Golovkin and then against Errol Spence Jr., Kell Brook had issues with his eye socket, with his right eye socket, which got fractured against Golovkin and then like aggravated against Errol Spence. And I mean, he took a pretty notable beating against Errol Spence. And he definitely did not lose a lot of stock in terms of public opinion in either of those fights. He put up a valiant effort in both fights, but he took the damage. Like, that stuff does add up. You know, he might not have lost much stock, but he took the physical damage. And I think that overall, he does look like he's lost a step in his fights since then. And he's been somewhat inactive. So it's
That. He's only fought, once since 2018?
Yeah. So because of that inactivity, it's really tough to say. And so I don't know. I think that it's probably both logical and pretty easy to dismiss, not entirely, but mostly dismiss Kell Brook in this fight. That could lead to a surprise for Terence Crawford if he's dismissing him, but I just don't think that – I think Kell Brook's time probably has passed. I think he's just kind of on the downside of – you know, right around like 2014, 2015 was when he looked real good. And I think that right since then, he's just kind of been.
Well, yeah. But, you know, Brook, when he came on the scene, everyone was really high on him. Obviously, he did have supreme talent. And than when he beat I still think he, you know, beat Sean Porter more comprehensively than anyone else when it comes to Porter's losses. And but then after he won the title, his defenses from there, you know, his career just kind of puttered for a minute because he couldn't secure any big fights. And, you know, this was before DAZN was around or anything like that. So he was just kind of stuck in limbo for a minute until he decided to take, you know, that challenge fight Golovkin. He was looking for a big fight. Golovkin obviously was looking for a big fight. There, no one was going to, in his division, was going to fight him. So Brook decided to move up. And obviously he was ambitious and HBO gobbled it up. And Brook made a fight of it. And you can't say he didn't. You know, he wasn't like competitive to the point where you thought that he might have a chance. But, you know, he did land some punches on Golovkin. He tried his best before his face got broken. And same thing with Spence. He put up a hell of a fight against Spence and was winning early on before, again, he started falling apart and his face fell apart again. But like you mentioned, those were two both grueling fights, and he took a lot of punishment in both of them and a lot of facial damage at that matter. So, yeah, he lost a step. And like, and since not being active either and only having this one fight, and, you know, he's probably on the downside of 34. And so this fight would, you know, if this was the Kell Brook of like you mentioned, 2013, 2014, this would be like a lot more exciting and, you know, a bigger fight. But now taking place at the end of 2020, not so much.
And I also, there was also a the matter of Kell Brook getting stabbed.
I was going to mention that. Didn't he get, yeah, he got stabbed, right, in his leg or something?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but it's just the circumstances surrounding Kell Brook being attacked in Tenerife in 2014 are just, I don't know that anybody really understands them. Or that he's ever really explained the circumstances fully. I don't know. Anyway, supposedly he was in some dude's house and the dude attacked him with a machete and got him in the leg. And it wound up like he needed like surgery, and it was a pretty significant attack. Anyway, it sounded like it was, that also might have contributed to his physical deterioration. But anyway, yeah, I think you're right. I think that he's not just 34. He's probably a slightly older 34. And, you know, it's not that he's only a year older than Terrence Crawford. So that's not to suggest like, oh, he's an old dude. But I think that Terrence Crawford also has gotten hit a lot less. You know, he's gotten through a lot of these fights. Just really.
Terrence Crawford hasn't had his eye sockets broken.
Yeah, that alone. That alone is pretty significant. So, I don't want to count out Kell Brook, but I'm kind of counting out Kell Brook.
I mean, the inactivity as well. The thing is that when you haven't fought, if you only fought once, and since 2018, and you know, it was in the and it was only at the beginning of this year. Yeah, you've been inactive. With that much inactivity coming in against such a, you know, against maybe the, what a lot of people consider the best pound for pound fighter in the world, that's it's a hard, you know, that's a big hill to climb.
No question. You know, and one of the I would recommend, you know, another name drop here before we get out of here in a couple minutes, but a name drop is Corey Erdman for, of course, Boxing Scene, wrote a pretty good article that came out this morning about Terrence Crawford that says strength of schedule is the only knock against Terrence Crawford that I would advise people to, of course, read. Basically, Corey's talking about exactly what we're talking about. You know, the perception of Terrence Crawford because of some of these fights that he has taken and some of the fights that he can't take, versus the perception of some of these other Premier Boxing Champion welterweights, for instance, who are kind of in a bit more of a round robin, or at least have more options. Mm-hmm. And anyway, he makes a number of really good points in his article. And yeah, you know, I don't know. What are you expecting from this fight? What do you think is going to happen?
You know, like most Crawford fights, I'm sure Brook is going to put up a good fight and they'll be competitive for a few rounds maybe. But once Crawford, as he usually does, he usually takes a few, unless he can overwhelm you quickly, he usually takes a few rounds to figure out. He might get hit a couple of times just to, like, you know, catch his rhythm. But once he gets a beat on you and starts dialing in, that's it. And then from there, he'll start working him over, and you probably will either win a unanimous decision or he might stop him late.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that that's a pretty solid prediction. I think that he probably will be gunning for a stoppage. It sounds like he's a slight bit salty.
He's always salty.
Yeah, that's true. He's definitely gotten more pissy in recent years, and it seems like he's motivated to make a statement in this fight, and so I think he probably will. But where he goes after this, I really don't know.
You know, that's I think top rank is like gonna try to build maybe a couple of the junior welterweights to move into a super fight with him eventually, like someone like Jose Ramirez.
Yeah,
but
I don't know what the other options are. Or Josh Taylor. Were. Yeah, but, I don't know what the other options
are. And that would be all about that. Those would be fantastic fights. Don't get me wrong, especially Josh Taylor. But first off, Taylor and Ramirez have to fight each other. But other than that, I don't know. You know, for instance, like, I still don't really understand why they couldn't have made Patrick Teixeira against Crawford. Teixeira was willing to fight him. I think Golden Boy definitely was willing to put him over to fight Crawford. And it wouldn't have been a difficult fight to make, probably. And they chose to go this route.
Well, I mean, I would imagine that there are probably fewer hurdles. Fewer promotional hurdles, or maybe maybe they're able to keep a bigger piece of the financial pie. I have no idea. I'm just kind of spitballing. But, you know, whatever it is, I don't know where he goes from there. And I personally don't really – I don't agree that there's always pressure for a fighter to move up per se. I just don't know how long – Top Rank could keep throwing, you know, somewhat subpar or likely subpar opponents at him and have it work. I have no idea how long that's going to work for, but I don't know. I like Terrence Crawford. I think he's a very good fighter. I'd just like to see him against the other very good welterweights.
Yeah, I think that's what it is with everyone too, is that he's such a supremely talented fighter and clearly won the best top three in the world that you just want to see him. You just want to see his talents be showcased against someone of equal, you know, where he's going to be actually in a fight where you have to really question, hey, is he going to lose this one tonight? He might. And right now, even though he's being showcased on ESPN to a wide audience, he's not being showcased against guys who you really have a chance against him.
And that's the name of the game, man. We want to be doubtful that a fighter is going to win. That's the whole point. We want to not know.
And I'm not saying that the guys that Crawford is fighting are absolute scrubs. Enough. They're really not. Mean Machine is a hell of a fighter. You know, Khan, a couple of years ago, still, you know, was a hell of a fighter. And, you know, up until when he fought Crawford, was actually looking good in his past couple of fights. And whoever, like you mentioned other names, like these guys are good fighters, but they're not on the level that they're going to be able to test Crawford.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes down to.
Exactly. And it's very possible that nobody can. It's just that they have to actually fight for us to know that, you know? Well, let's see. There actually was another thing I wanted to say. One last thing. And actually it wasn't on BoxRec, unfortunately. Layla McCarter, who is easily one of the best fighters in women's boxing today. She's been around a while. She was, for a number of years, waiting on a shot at a big name in women's boxing and hasn't yet been able to land that fight. And she kind of flew under the radar this past weekend, and she wound up getting a decision win in 8 rounds over Beatrice Aguilar. And again, it's not even on BoxRec. I don't know, and I don't think anybody even covered it for Fight News or anything, because I didn't really see any updates about it. But it's significant because we're actually expecting Layla McCarter, hopefully in 2021, to be making an appearance in Portland on a Portland card, defending her world titles there. So hopefully that winds up being the case, and hopefully coronavirus kind of, like, you know, subsides enough for that to actually happen. But significant that she came back and won a fight in any way.
Oh, for sure. And another thing that should be mentioned that I'm reading right now, Mauricio Suleiman has announced their new 224-pound division between cruiserweight and heavyweight be called Bridgerweight.
Chill, are you serious?
I'm serious as a heart attack, my man. Oh, and it's going to be named after Bridger. It's going to be named after the kid, Bridger Walker, who was injured protecting his younger sister from a dog. I mean, I heard of that story, but Bridgerweight?
What?
Jeez, God.
You know, all right. So you did actually mention the whole title situation at lightweight earlier, and I forgot to kind of touch on that. So,
I mean, I didn't want to go too far in because even right. I'm giving myself a headache, bro.
That's like its whole episode. But I'll just kind of, since we didn't really elaborate, I'll just explain. In last summer, not 2020, but 2019, the WBC announced that they were going to be having a franchise champion in certain divisions, whatever. They basically explained this decision in some fucking wordy ass announcement that went out as a press release that made almost zero sense whatsoever. It was the kind of thing where it's like, it's basically the way that like Donald Trump talks, where like you're saying a shitload of words, but like nothing really is like coming together meaning anything. And they were like, we are making the franchise champion to honor the honorary excellence of the excellent championship, fortitude of knowledge, attitude, situation, like just a bunch of like fucking words that didn't mean anything. Basically, all they were saying was that they were taking the belt away from a franchise champion and giving the belt to somebody else, but that this other franchise champion totally was still a champion. They just didn't have the actual belt. I don't know. Of course, sanctioning fees all over the place. So the whole point is that this is what happened in the lightweight division where Teofimo Lopez beat Vasily Lomachenko, who was the franchise champion. And so Devin Haney now holds the WBC regular something or other. And now this is what this has come to, is that they've thought up another way, another division to get more sanctioning fees because they apparently are not having enough annual fucking conventions in Cancun and Puerto Vallarta and other places like that where it's like some extravagant Ritz-Carlton hotel fucking shit.
They just get involved in everything, man.
I don't get it, dude. I get it. It's just that, you know, colloquially, I don't get it. It's fucking like, why are we supporting this? Much. Why is anybody buying into this, dude? This is so stupid. And the only argument is like, well, they're important to the fighters. Well, okay, cool. But what the fuck, dude? We're just rewarding these asses, man.
I don't know. I just hope, which I know they'll do, Ring Magazine. Remember how it took years and years and years before Ring ever acknowledged strawweight and junior flyweight and certain divisions like that? Like, they just... Hell, I think I was a fan when I was reading them back then where they... I think they just... I don't even think they put those guys in the rankings. Like, they just had flyweight and that was it. And then, you know, you would just see Ricardo Lopez randomly in the pound-for-pound rankings. But this is Bridgerweight.
Yeah, no. Nope, I'm going to pass. I'm going to, you know, Bridger, I salute you. Nothing against you, my friend.
Oh, no, absolutely, man. Story, but yeah, what in the absolute helmet? You know, Mauricio Suleiman must be a WWE fan. This is the only thing I can think of, all right? I'm being serious here. You're like, he has to be, because the WWE is the same type of people that do the same shit where they just like they come up with the most ridiculous, stupid name. I'm not talking about this kid, but just like they come up with the most ridiculous concepts you can imagine. And also their new gimmick is that anytime anybody wins a belt, wins something, whether it's like the Super Bowl or this or that or NBA titles, this title, golf champion, whatever you do, you win something monumentous, you know, the schmucks over at WWE going to send you one of their titles, right? So you can call yourself a WWE champion, just like Hulk Hogan and Bob Backlund and Undertaker and all the other howdy doodies were back then, right? And I'm a wrestling fan. I'm just talking in general because I really can't stand WWE anymore. But Now the WBC does the same thing. You know what I mean? They have a towel belt for trainers. They have this thing for that one. They have a trailer for that. And Mauricio Suleiman has to be in the – like, he has to be, like, the face of boxing. He basically admitted it recently when he jumped – when he interceded on his own with no one asking him to do it to for the Tyson Roy Jones exhibition.
Yeah, and
– that was its own thing. Who told him to get involved in that?
I know that a lot of people don't like Canelo, and like, whatever, that's fine. You know, that's your prerogative to like him or not like him. But I got to respect that. I can't even remember what fight it was for, but they came up with some, you know, Rudy Pooh ass belt for him. And he was like, nah, I'm good. I got to respect him because he was straight up like, I don't know what the fuck you guys are doing. I'm good. Because, you know, it's at some point you got to draw a line, man. I respect whatever they profess to be doing with the honorary whatever, but I'm good, dude. We need fewer belts, not more. Period. It doesn't need to be qualified or have any asterisks.
Much fewer.
We just need fewer. That's it. That's it. So
we're gonna come up with a franchise title and this one and that one. Who knows if Teofimo's franchise champ or not? And or Devin Haney is an actual, you know, he's an email WBC champion. There's just so much confusion, bro.
Yeah, it's weak. So, yeah, whatever. I'm not going to listen to a whole lot of that type of shit. But that being said, you know, it was a decent little rundown. We got to keep it somewhat short, somewhat sweet here. But hopefully the fights this weekend are good. Overarching theme, though, is this past weekend, not very good. Hopefully this coming weekend, good. Right?
Absolutely.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you if you listen to this entire thing. We appreciate it, and we will definitely catch you soon. But in the meanwhile, go ahead, and if you're on Twitter, follow us there. Follow Eris Pina at Punch Zone Eris, and follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. If you are on Facebook, go to the Knuckles and Gloves page, and also there's a podcast page, whichever one you want. They mostly post similar things, but if you got the time, go to knucklesandgloves.com because I'm trying to update the website a little bit more and make it more fun. And I think that's about it. Oh, yeah, the whole podcast app business. Subscribe. That's about it. All right, man. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. Eris, I'll talk to you soon, man.
Talk to you soon. Have a good one, everyone.
All right, everybody. Take it easy.
Oh, when you hear me holler, baby. No.